Welcome to Deconstructed. I'm TJ O'Hara, the principal political analyst for IVN, the Independent Voter News. Our goal on Deconstructed is to break down important political issues with outstanding guests so you can develop your own more informed opinion. My guest today is Aaron Hamlin, executive director and co-founder of the Center for Election Science. Mr. Hamlin is a licensed attorney who also has two additional graduate degrees in social sciences. He is also an electoral systems expert who's been featured on MSNBC.com, NPR, and Free Speech TV, as well as in publications including Inside Philanthropy, 80,000 Hours, and Popular Mechanics. Mr. Hamlin has given talks across the country on voting methods and written articles for Deadspin, USA Today magazine, our very own Independent Voter News, and other publications. He's here today to discuss approval voting and the studies his center has done on that subject. Welcome to Deconstructed, Aaron.
Thanks for having me, TJ.
Aaron, how did you become involved in studying alternative election systems?
I think, like a lot of people, which is getting really annoyed with the consequences and the environment. And when I was in grad school, the group of folks I was around during a particular election cycle, they were talking about who they were going to vote for. And like, I got the sense that they really weren't voting for people who aligned with their interests, given what I knew about them. And so I kind of put them to task about it and asking like, hey, like, why aren't you voting for the people you really agree with? And that was really the kind of conversation that moved me in the direction of thinking about voting methods and thinking about the way that individually and as a group, we're kind of pushed in certain directions, not based on what we actually think or what we think would be better for us or our country, but more just in terms of the way that a voting method is pushing us. And it's really that kind of thinking and that kind of discussion that put me in the direction of thinking about how important it was to have the right voting method, to make sure that we have the right tool to be able to communicate what we think and how we feel about the way that we want our country to be run.
Now, your center is focused on a method called approval voting. So help us understand the difference between the current model of plurality voting, the popular emerging model of ranked choice voting, and the approval voting model you prefer.
Sure. So the way that we're used to voting in a lot of elections is you see a bunch of candidates on your ballot, hopefully a bunch, depending on the ballot access laws in your jurisdiction. But in any case, however many there are, you're forced to choose just one of them. And the candidate with the most votes wins. And if you think about it, that's about the least amount of information that you can provide. And so we don't often get asked like what we think and have it be leveraged in a meaningful way other than when we vote. So it's pretty important that we get this one right. And so we really aren't given very much voice when we're normally asked to vote and choose just one candidate. Approval voting is a bit different than that. It looks similar in a lot of ways, but it has one important difference. That important difference is instead of being able to say that you approve of just one person, you can talk about all the candidates that you approve of. And so if you like two or three candidates out of a slate of like six or eight, you can approve of two or three. Or if there's a candidate that you really like, but you don't know whether they can win, well, you can support them and you can also support another candidate that you think is more likely to win. Or maybe you only like one candidate. That's fine too. But the point is that you get this flexibility and that you're able to provide this rich information about really saying who you actually want to see elected.
Now, that is distinguished from ranked choice voting, which allows you to vote for multiple candidates, but do so on a ranked basis. Let's talk about the difference in particular between approval voting and ranked choice voting so that everybody gets a clearer understanding of that difference. Let's talk about ballot simplicity. How would you compare the two?
So with approval voting, it's actually hard to think about how you might spoil a ballot. So other than like maybe dropping it in mud or something, it's really inconceivable of spoiling an approval voting ballot. So you can vote for everyone. It's kind of a weird choice, but you could technically do that. In studies that we've seen and elections that we've seen, nobody actually does that. But even if you did, like it wouldn't be a spoiled ballot. And so it's really hard to come up with ways of making your ballot invalid with approval voting other than like maybe ripping it in half or something crazy. With ranked choice voting, however, there are a number of ways that the added complexity of ranked choice voting can make it more challenging. So you could rank multiple candidates as first. That's one way. And keep in mind here as well that election administrators will do their best in terms of being able to interpret what they think you meant. but being able to provide that information in the first place in a way that you really understand immediately can be challenging. And there's also the issue of exhausted ballots, where because ranked choice voting can be kind of complicated because you're asked to rank all these candidates, in some cases, like a whole bunch of candidates. You can think, for example, in ranked choice voting isn't used in this context, but you can imagine the California recall election right now where there are 46 candidates. You can imagine trying to rank all of those. So it can be complicated in those. And in other cases too, just because you can't have this crazy grid with ranked choice voting in terms of being able to provide all your rankings for all the candidates. In many cases, what cities and states will do is they will truncate it so that they limit the number of candidates that you can rank. And as a result of that, if the candidates that you put on that ballot don't make it to the later rounds because ranked choice voting is constantly eliminating candidates who had the fewest first choice votes. So if none of the rankings that you have make it to the later rounds, you're not contributing anymore as well. Whereas approval voting addresses all of that by just saying, like, hey, approve of all you want, doesn't take any additional ballot space, and the candidate still with the most approvals wins. So you don't have all these extra steps, and it's integrated in a pretty seamless way that's not too disruptive from what we're used to.
Now, from a physical ballot standpoint, there really isn't very much of a difference between approval voting and plurality voting. The ballot physically doesn't have to be printed in a different way. Is that correct?
Yeah, you're really just talking about changing the directions and saying vote for as many as you approve of, or really just making it clear to the voter that they're not restricted to just one. And other than that, you're right. Like, it's really the same kind of ballot. We're really lucky in that we have a voting method that performs so well and hits really well in a number of metrics that we care about in terms of winner selection and really being able to capture the support of candidates. We're lucky that it's able to do all that and at the same time be as simple as it is.
Now, I've heard that people will favor approval voting because the arithmetic is simple. It's you're basically just adding votes, and whoever has the most votes is the winner. Whereas ranked choice voting, or RCV as it sometimes is called, requires an algorithm. However, in today's day and age of programming and so forth, is that really a significant difference, or is it more the physical representation of trying to get 46 people represented on a ballot under an RCV approach?
I think one is what you can't get past is the interface that the voters have. Like, they have to look at some kind of ballot, and it has to be reasonable for them to be able to put down that information. And just as a matter of feasibility, when you have a bunch of candidates, it's hard to rank all of them. And we know meaningfully through research such as like Mark Kilgore, a researcher in Canada, that when you limit the amount of information, whether explicitly by only allowing voters to rank a certain number of candidates, or if you just have a long candidate list and voters get tired and they don't want to rank them all, that by not having that information, you can miss out on being able to identify the best winner. And so there are consequences to not being able to provide that information or a full set of information. And it may be possible for someone to look at approval voting and think like, well, maybe I'm not providing a whole lot of information. But something to keep in mind is that you're never limited in the number of approvals that you can put down. And it's easy to do it. It's not a huge cognitive burden. It doesn't make you all mentally tired to go through and say like, okay, like these are the people I approve of, versus like imagine ranking a set of like 10 or 12 candidates. And then another component of information that you're getting there with approval voting that you don't get with ranked choice voting, just by the type of ranking information that you're providing, is that when you put down information with approval voting, you're saying, this is a candidate I'm comfortable with if they're elected. Whereas with ranked choice voting, when you're providing ranking information, never are you saying, this is a candidate that I'm comfortable with. You never have that information. You only have it, I like this candidate better than this candidate, better than this candidate. But you're never saying like, hey, this is a candidate that I'm comfortable with. This is a candidate that I would be happy if they won. So that's one important differentiation.
There's always discussion around voting machine costs as some become aged and are retired and new machines have to be brought in and so forth. Does approval voting enter into that in any regard as compared to ranked choice voting?
In both Fargo and St. Louis, where approval voting has been implemented, it was an issue in both of those cases. So in both of those cases, actually couldn't implement ranked choice voting without a huge bill for the city, which frankly, neither city could afford. And approval voting was a way to have a shovel-ready solution that didn't have this extra complexity to it. one thing to keep in mind, which alludes to your last question as well, which is there are some jurisdictions that have expensive voting machines that can handle ranked choice voting. And one question is, just because you can do ranked choice voting and you have the equipment to do so, does it make sense to? And one component is, particularly in the environment that we're in now, where there's a lot of skepticism from certain groups about our election integrity. And so do we really want to give them the impression that like something is going behind a black box, even if it is legitimate in terms of the calculation? Do we really want to give that appearance? And so if we have a choice of saying, okay, well, we have two voting methods, I would say that approval voting gives better results and does a better job in terms of accuracy of support for candidates. But even if they were equal, even if approval voting and ranked choice voting were equal, I think it's clear to say that we would want a more transparent solution, even if technically we can have a computer go through a complicated algorithm to spit out the solution. And even if that's verifiable, I think people in general, particularly in the time of skepticism that we have with election integrity, that it makes sense to prefer the simpler solution, even if you technically can go through and use a computer to figure out the result.
Aaron, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about approval voting when we come back. Welcome back. My guest today is Aaron Hamlin, Executive Director and co-founder of the Center for Election Science. Aaron, let's talk about some of the other differences between approval voting and RCV. How about risk of ties? You've talked about spoiler impact, but let's talk about the risk of ties.
Sure. So one interesting thing is that when you have a large enough sample or large enough set of voters, the risk of ties becomes lower. And this is just like a probability thing, where as you have a whole bunch of people voting, the risk of two people having the same vote tally becomes less. And that's true regardless of the voting method that you're using, whether you're using approval voting or plurality voting. Technically, the risk of tie is a little bit higher with ranked choice voting. And the reason for that is that you're creating more opportunities for ties. So you have all these rounds. Each round has an opportunity for a tie between these candidates. That being said, again, the same thing holds true with ranked choice voting, that as you have a higher number of voters, that the risk of a tie becomes less, but you still have more opportunities for tie with ranked choice voting. But the other component too is that by some election laws, when you can't have an automatic recount triggered, not necessarily by a tie, but if it's close to a particular degree, say like within like a percentage point or something like that, in some cases you can have an automatic recount triggered, which is something that we kind of factor in anyway that's independent of the voting method.
What about the horrible spoiler effect that people always bring up, having run as an independent at one point in time? I can tell you everybody would say, well, I'd rather vote for you, but your probability of winning is nil, so I'm wasting my vote. So how do you overcome the spoiler impact and also that belief system that's been propagated by the major parties?
So we think about spoiler in a particular way, but I'll maybe get into another way that maybe we don't think about as often. The first way that I think we think about the most often is the idea of a third party or independent who they're popular, but they're not super popular. So as an example, like we might think of someone like Ralph Nader when he ran in 2000, or in some cases, like maybe if the Libertarian Party was even more popular and in particularly close states, maybe they could have been a spoiler. And so for us, like, there are a couple components there. It's like, one is like, maybe we don't want to see a worse outcome because of a candidate who wasn't able to win. And then the second component that we're thinking about is, we also want to be able to support candidates because we like what they say and we like their ideas, but we want to be able to do so that doesn't harm us overall in terms of getting a worse outcome. And so that's something that we kind of want to be able to balance. And so when we're thinking about, for instance, with approval voting is really, really nice here, because when you're approving all the candidates that you like, including third party and independent candidates, all of that counts as the same and it's all tallied at the same time. And so you have a very clear measure of support for third parties and independents. And we've seen that in a number of studies as well. That's probably one of the most robust findings with approval voting, is that it does such a good job helping third parties and independents. We did a study in 2016. We saw that. We did another study in 2020, which hasn't been published yet, but the 2016 study has been published. If you just go on Google Scholar and look 2016 presidential election approval voting. It'll come right up. We also paid the fee so that it's not behind a paywall, so you can look at that. But with ranked choice voting, it's a little bit different. So we're often told that you can vote your favorite in ranked choice voting, and that's not always the case. But aside from that, what we can see is, like, looking, for instance, at Maine. I think Maine was the perfect opportunity to see whether ranked choice voting was going to be good for third parties. And when we look at the presidential election in Maine, which used ranked choice voting, and we look at the Libertarian and Green Party candidate, they really didn't do any better than they usually do under plurality voting. And when I brought this up to other folks before, like in third parties and other RCV advocates, the response that I've gotten was like, well, like, this was a really important election. And so that's why ranked choice voting didn't do as well. And to me, like, that's not good enough. All the elections are important elections. And so we should have a voting method that's robust enough to be able to capture that support, regardless of how important the election is. It should never vary in terms of how well we're able to capture all the candidates' support. And so that's something that approval voting does really well. We also saw that in the Democratic primaries as well, where candidates, like, technically they weren't third parties or independents, but the same idea got across, which was, just because someone wasn't a front runner, we're still able to see how well they were doing and how popular they were with their ideas. And that's something that approval voting just does really robustly. And then separately, like, there's the issue of a way that we don't typically think about spoilers, which I'm happy to address if you like.
You know, we're also dealing with two major parties who love to win. They love nothing better than winning. So what type of tactical susceptibility does approval voter have versus ranked choice voting?
So one of the big criticisms that's often launched at approval voting is that, well, like, people will just choose one candidate and that'll cause everything to implode and it'll be just as bad as it always was. So I think that's kind of the most common criticism. And I think, like, superficially, that's something to fall for. And when we look at, for instance, in St. Louis with that election, you had about voters choosing 1.6 candidates when there were four candidates to choose from. And so you might look, it's like, well, like, is that enough? Like, is that enough people choosing multiple candidates? And so I think that's really not the right way to look at it. I think the right way to look at it is, when people needed the option to choose multiple candidates, are they able to utilize it in a meaningful way? And we can measure that empirically by saying, did approval voting get the right winner? And we can measure right winner in a number of ways, including, like, asking honest assessments of candidates, which we've done empirically. And then the other component, in addition to did we get the right winner, is, did all the candidates get their accurate reflection of support? And so what's important there is that those two are done well. And we can say, like, maybe folks didn't get as many approvals, or folks didn't utilize approval voting in terms of approving more than one candidate as much as maybe we thought was appropriate. But really, I think that's a moot point. What's really important is how well it did on winner selection, how well it did on capturing support. But technically, that's kind of one criticism that's launched at approval voting. With ranked choice voting, it becomes a bit challenging. And a big part of why it can be challenging with ranked choice voting is because it really is a more complicated method. Like, you're doing all these rounds, all these ballot transfers, and narrowing it down to two candidates over a series of rounds when candidates are eliminated and the ballots are transferred. And so it can be kind of complicated to see how tactical voting works. And maybe in ranked choice voting, it's more appropriate to think about kind of accidentally hurting yourself. So one example that really hits that on the head is with the 2009 Burlington, Vermont election, where the voters were told that they can honestly rank their favorite candidate, and everybody listened to them, including conservative voters. And for some context here, Burlington, Vermont is pretty liberal. And in that particular election, you had a progressive candidate, a Democrat candidate, and a Republican candidate. And those conservative voters, they went ahead and ranked their Republican candidate, their favorite, as first because they thought it was fine. But what happened as a result was the Democrat candidate got eliminated first, and enough of voters who ranked that candidate first had their subsequent preferred candidate as the progressive candidate, so the progressive candidate wound up winning. And so what wound up going on here was, it was a number of things. One is that we know from the ballot data that the best winner really was the Democrat candidate, and we could take that data and see that that Democrat candidate was able to beat everyone else head-to-head. And the other interesting part is that, in addition to not selecting the right winner, again, ranked choice voting selected the progressive candidate instead of the Democrat candidate, but also had those conservative voters tactically voted for the Democrat candidate first instead of the Republican candidate, they would have gotten a better result. And so that's the case where it's confusing and that it's difficult to be able to tell certain voters that, like, hey, if you rank this candidate as first, you may get a worse result, but we don't know exactly when. Maybe you should play it safe. I guess, like, what I'm saying there is that tactical voting can be complicated within ranked choice voting, and you can get a pretty bad outcome overall in certain cases, but it's hard to predict exactly which of those cases it's going to be.
Aaron, we're going to take a quick break and talk more about approval voting when we come back. Welcome back. My guest today is Aaron Hamlin, Executive Director and co-founder of the Center for Election Science. Aaron, we've talked about the relative pros and cons of approval voting. There's actually some real-world examples of it. June 9th, 2020, for example, there was an election for city commission in Fargo, North Dakota. How did the voters react to that?
Yeah, I think overall they were pretty pleased, particularly because their elections prior to that were not so great. So they were having elections where candidates were winning with under 30% of the vote, and you have all kinds of vote splitting as a consequence of the number of candidates. And it was also pretty clear because the commission itself had set up a task force to study better voting methods, in which the task force actually recommended approval voting. The commission ignored it, and the members of the task force had to go and pass it by ballot initiative, which, of course, they did by 63%. But the voters really recognized that there was a problem to begin with. There was vote splitting where candidates were winning with under 30%, and they really had no idea who the winner is. And so the fact that you had here, like, it was applied to a two-winner election, but in any case, both the candidates got over the 50% approval threshold versus the 30% that they were struggling to get past before. So I think it was pretty clear in terms of the difference in how approval voting really gave them the types of clarity that they wanted to see.
Very interesting. Now, just as recently as this March, there was an approval voting primary in St. Louis. How did that go?
The folks in St. Louis, I guess, maybe in some ways wanted it out to outdo the Fargo folks. So they passed approval voting by 68%, 5 points higher than the Fargo ballot initiative passed. And so in St. Louis, there was really an issue there with vote splitting, particularly within the Black and progressive community in St. Louis. And it led to some outcomes that, like, a lot of the voters weren't very happy with. And so with approval voting, what we saw was, one, we didn't see the vote within the Black community split. And then secondly, we didn't see the vote within the progressive community split. And so as a consequence, we saw someone that was really representative of the voters who, in that open primary where you can choose as many as you want under approval voting, that person, Tashara Jones, really kind of stood out and didn't have to go through these kind of ridiculous issues of vote splitting that she had to in the prior election. And as a consequence, she was able to also win in the runoff as well. The approval voting result really kind of, like, showed how clearly ahead of the pack that she was. And so, again, like, we see an issue where there was all kinds of vote splitting, and the city was facing the consequences of that vote splitting from the choose one method that was used prior. Approval voting, in a very seamless and clear way, was able to address that problem. And really, like, almost kind of unremarkably, by how simple it was, be able to really focus the attention on what mattered, which was not the vote splitting, but instead making sure that candidates were able to get their ideas out there, and that really the candidate that best represented the people was the one who was able to stand out.
Now, the Center for Election Science did a study of how different voting methods would have affected the 2016 presidential election, and that study was published in the European Journal of Political Economy. What were the results of that study? What were the defining elements?
Yeah, here I'm pretty proud of the design that we use, which allowed each respondent to say how they would vote under multiple different voting methods. And then on top of that, we had a control measure where we asked respondents to say honestly how much they wanted a particular candidate to get elected. And we asked them to say that on a scale of 0 to 5. And so that was a way to create a double checking of sorts, to see how accurate the voting method was by comparing it to this kind of honest control measure. And we saw approval voting, particularly compared to ranked choice voting and plurality voting, do a much better job of lining up with that honest assessment control measure. Now, I mentioned earlier about how well third parties do under approval voting, and this really emphasizes that point. So in 2016, for example, the Green Party candidate, Jill Stein, and then Gary Johnson under the Libertarian Party didn't do so well. They got 1% and 3% in the actual election under our plurality voting. But under approval voting, Joe Stein got 9% and Gary Johnson got 21%, which is enormous. And that's also way more support than they got under a study under ranked choice voting. And for example, just like the 21% that Gary Johnson got, the Commission on Presidential Debates requires that you hit 15% on multiple national polls to get in the debate. So that would have been enough to make sure that he got in the debate, even under the arbitrary and kind of obtrusive threshold that the Commission on Presidential Debates sets up. So what this is saying is that we can get a better measure of support, a way better measure of support for third parties, and it can have real world impact, not just in terms of making sure that their ideas get out there, but also interacting with making sure that like they can't be marginalized by media in the same way, and they can't get kicked off that debate stage artificially.
Aaron, I wish we had time to get into the center study of the 2020 Democratic primary, but that's available on your website. So in the limited amount of time we have left, where can our listeners go to learn more about you, approval voting, and the work of the Center for Election Science?
Sure. So you can go to electionscience.org, and there you can sign up for our mailing list to make sure that you don't miss out on anything. We also have chapters across the U.S. So if you want to make sure that your city or state has the ability to implement approval voting, you can sign up for our chapter program. And by that, you can go to Take Action and then join the chapter program. We also have a Discord where you can talk with a bunch of our other supporters. And that's also in the Take Action menu, and then join the Discord chat. So we have a bunch of ways to get involved. And if you like social media, we have a Facebook page, we have a Twitter page. And also, if you want to follow me personally, I have a website, which is just aaronhamlin.com. You can see a bunch of my essays on voting methods. And you can also follow me on Twitter, where I'm talking about a lot of voting method stuff, but also other miscellaneous stuff like locks and chess and fun stuff like that. But you can go to electionscience.org and sign up for a mailing list. And you can also donate there. We are a 501c3 nonprofit, and we will greatly appreciate your donation. And also, our team is very technically savvy. If you have interesting or complicated assets that you want to be able to donate to really push this home, to make sure that we're able to see the change that really we all deserve.
Aaron Hamlin, you've provided a lot of food for thought when it comes to the use of approval voting. And I think your comparison of that alternative to ranked choice voting was quite valuable. I look forward to additional studies by the Center for Election Science as they become available. Aaron, I wish you good luck with your initiative, and thank you for joining me on Deconstructed.
Thank you, TJ.